This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by you. That's right, you. At patreon.com/currentgeek. Consider supporting the show you love today.
International Rescue. If only I knew their secrets, I would be the wealthiest man in the world. And you, Kerano, my own brother, are in their midst. But because of your misguided loyalties, you refuse to help me.
I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek Autopilot Edition, a chance for us to go back and watch the pilot episode of an old classy geeky TV show and talk about it. Talk about how maybe it differed from the rest of the series and what it became and what that thing is in general. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt. And this week, we're talking about the original Thunderbirds TV show. You might say Thunderbirds TV show is a go.
You might say that. They say that.
A lot.
We are not talking about the reboot Thunderbirds Are Go by Weta that is on Amazon. That is a 2015 reboot. No, sir. We are talking about the original Super Marionation 1965 era Thunderbirds.
Yeah. Can you tell
International Rescue.
This thing that Weta's doing, the reboot, is it like a 3D animated deal or something?
They use models, so it's got like the house, the Tracy house. Looks pretty much the same.
Okay.
I don't think it's the same model, but they made a model that looks like it. But then they use CG for the characters. They don't use marionettes.
No, that kind of bums me out. But also, I know it's rated kind of high. People like it.
So yeah. Maybe they're basically remaking. There is an episode that is exactly the same as Trapped in the Sky, the pilot episode of the 1965 series.
Well, that's what we do here on the autopilot version of the show. Usually I don't have allergies, so if I sneeze a couple times during this episode, I apologize. It's got nothing to do with the Thunderbirds or Tom Merritt or really anything.
My Alan Tracy wacky wobbler is a little dusty. That might be why you're sneezing.
Oh, my Lord. Look at you with the thing nearby. I'm just going to pretend that you just grabbed that because it was handy. Not, you didn't plan on it.
Born on March 12th, 2044, Alan Tracy is a mere 21 years old, a sensitive guy. Alan is the compassionate member of the International Rescue Team. He has a love of motor racing and was a champion driver prior to becoming the pilot of the massive space rocket Thunderbird 3.
Yeah, he's kind of
That's what it says on the box.
Yeah, he's your... he's kind of your main dude. He's your... he's the son with the most fun, I guess. But there's a whole bunch of stuff I didn't know. I may as well start with that. I didn't know. I remember seeing this when I was a kid, a whole bunch and all that, but I didn't know it was like a dad and all his weird money and tech backing. And then like nine boys or however many it is. I had no idea. Where's
no
the
daughters.
Mom? Yeah.
He had all boys apparently.
Yeah. And there's no mom to speak of, or is she come in later? I don't know.
I don't remember.
There's probably some story probably killed.
Instead we get Lady Penelope.
Yeah.
Penelope is the female member of International Rescue who lives in England.
Yeah.
And in this episode, the pilot episode, she's labeled as International Rescue England.
Yeah.
The England branch, which is just her. And I don't know if you noticed this, Scott, doesn't do anything.
No, I noticed.
Yeah. It's her driver that does all of the crime fighting, but she gets the credit.
Yeah. She sat in the back of that limo and, really made it work, but
shoot at him now.
It's so 1960 something in this thing, but I'm gonna say how surprised I was at how cool this is. Like, I know it's cheeseball, I know Team America is based on it in terms of like that's a big satire of this marionette style thing and all that, but I'd forgotten just how intricate the sets were, how detailed everything is. Like, this is clearly somebody's labor of love and not just thrown together garbage or low budget. Like, everything's thought of. These nice, even these little blinking lights in the tower or the London Tower where a lot of the action happens or a lot of the dialogue happens, and stuff on their ships. And even though it's ridiculous, like a wall that bends back and sends you down a chute to hop in your plane before you take off, very Batman and Robin 60s sort of Adam West era stuff like that. It's all done with such care and weird accuracy in some cases. Like the entire story arc is shrouded in a little bit of mysticism and possibly magic. Guy's talking to his brother through telekinesis or something. across the world, and that seems supernatural and all that. But then the huge portion of this thing in the middle bit is all like very tactical, and we got to land this just right and make sure.
Well, because the good guys use science,
yeah,
and the hood, the bad guy, doesn't.
Yeah,
and yeah. It's a very 60s approach. Like, science is the hope of the future, and the good guys will always use science. Science will prevail.
But I feel like this was less, I mean, I can't speak to it because I was not alive during this. Neither were you, but.
No.
Was this aimed at, who is this aimed at?
We were both dead for tax reasons.
Who is this aimed at? If it was at kids, it feels a little over their head. If it was aimed at adults, a little under. So I don't know where this is supposed to aim, except it's awesome. And I love that it exists, but I can't tell who this is for.
That's a fair question and a good opportunity to make our disclaimer that, yeah, there are Gerry Anderson fans out there who know every answer to every question about the Thunderbirds. We ain't them. Current Geek, we just geek out about stuff, and we're geeking out about Thunderbirds. Right. But you're right. Like, it is ostensibly a kid's show because it's Super Marionation. And especially in the 60s, anything that isn't live action is for kids.
Right.
Animation. There's no idea like The Simpsons or anything. Like, no, if it's a cartoon, it's for kids. If it's marionettes, must be for kids. But it's pretty sophisticated. Now, they do a lot of the kids things. Like, for instance, when Meddings falls from the plane, for a second, I'm like, oh, that's kind of dark. Uh-huh. And then they're like, oh, his parachute has opened. He's okay. I'm like, oh, right. That's a kids show move. Like, make you worry. And then, like, everything turns out all right. And you never see anybody die. Even the hood, when he gets run off the road, they make sure to show. And, you know, he's just busted up, but he's not dead. No murders happen in this kid's show.
Yeah, like, it's there's a moment there where they say, oh, no, his chute has failed. And...
Yeah, I know.
I thought, oh, he's going to die then.
I know, right? Yeah. I mean, they really push it up to the edge for 65, I think.
And they also did some stuff in here that I don't know if they would do today. And maybe they do in that remake. I haven't seen it. But there's a lot of moments of redo. Like, complicated things that have to happen. Like, this plane needs to land on these elevator platforms.
Right.
And most TV shows, especially those aimed at kids, it'd be pretty straightforward. It'd be like, you either land that or you don't. And of course you're going to land it because this is what the good guys do, and they solve the problem. And the last minute, the music gets real loud and everyone's excited. What this thing does is multiple attempts to save this thing and multiple failures at it. And then they got to keep trying.
Which makes it feel more real, don't you think?
I totally agree. And that's why I'm weirded out by this, because I didn't expect that. I thought I would just go, look at these dumb puppets. Look at this horrible acting. And those are there, right? The things I expected are there. But then there were moments of like, oh my gosh, like I was seriously edging my seat a little bit when they were landing that thing.
Yeah, it was something I was watching because it looked cool. Like you said, like, wow, these sets are amazing. And yeah, you can see the strings, but you know, Super Marionation, which was the idea of automatic marionettes. It wasn't each string held by a hand. There was some machine involved in moving them. I was like, looks good, looks smooth, great model work. And a lot of that is due at Meddings. I couldn't find any confirmation of this, but the special effect guy was named Meddings. The special effect director for Thunderbirds is Derek Meddings. Mm. And then you have the character Lieutenant Bob Meddings. I'm like, that must have been named after him, right? Yeah, but yeah, Derek Meddings does an amazing job. Here it is. I finally did find it. As an in-joke, the character of Lieutenant Meddings is named after Bob Bell, the AP Films art director, and Derek Meddings, the director of special effects.
Oh,
there you go.
That's cool.
It's a combination of those names. Anyway, Derek Meddings does an amazing job with these special effects. And that particular scene you're talking about where the elevator cars are trying to land the plane and one of them spins out and they're like, take off, keep going. First of all, they had just told the plane to cut its engines.
Right.
So how could it pull? How could it, you know, pull out? They didn't say pull out. What did they say?
No, they said go. I don't remember the term. It was like that, though. It was like, but
it implied that they could just keep flying. I'm like, they cut their engines. I mean, anyway, that spin out was a gaffe. That was
oh, I didn't know.
That was a mistake. in the production when they were filming, one of the lines that was holding that third elevator car snapped. And so they looked at the film afterwards and they're like, "Oh, that looks good." I mean, that looks real.
Yeah.
And so they changed the script and said, "Hey, can we actually, you know, make it so the first attempt doesn't work?" And it wasn't planned, but it comes across so much more realistic of like, yeah, stuff goes wrong, you know?
Yeah. I think I finally get it though. Like I finally get the obsession that fans have for this work. I didn't get it as a kid, because as a kid I just thought, well, this is a cheesy thing and whatever. I've moved on to G.I. Joe or whatever else I thought was cool. And you know, this stuff's a limited release in terms of reruns and things, so I didn't see it that often.
Yeah.
So I just kind of forgot about it, to be honest. And then there was that live action movie that happened in the 90s-ish era that sucked, and that didn't do anything for me. And so it took me this long to consume it in this way, where I could kind of take my time with it, really watch it and go, oh, this is innovative as hell for the time. Like, this is really impressive stuff. And it made me want to deep dive into who Gerry Anderson was, who was originally born as Gerald Alexander Abrahams, which is a cool name. Anyway, that guy just died back in 2012. He was here for a long time, and I would love to have met this guy now. I feel like he's some kind of freaking creative genius. It makes me want to go make models and little train sets and stuff for some reason. Like,
We should point out the Thunderbirds was not his first Super Marionation. It was his fourth, depending on how you count it. It could be counted as his fifth. It's Four Feather Falls, Supercar, Fireball XL5, and Stingray. And at the time Stingray came out, a lot of people thought that would be the thing he would be known for, because it was also very good.
Yeah,
very well received.
Thunderbirds. So here's the Anderson super marionated television shows, and it has this great kind of Technicolor logo thing they use, this big, wide, weird font. Anyway, Four Feathers Falls, which you mentioned, Supercar, Fireball XL5, which a bunch of people in Twitter kept poking me about while I was putting up these GIFs I made from the show. I think they
I just mentioned all those, right?
Yeah. I just think they thought that's what that was from.
Oh, because it's same style.
Sure. And then you got, what's this Captain Secret, Scarlet and the Mysterians?
That's after Thunderbirds.
Okay.
Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons.
Oh, Mysterons.
Actually had one more episode than Thunderbirds.
Nice.
It ran for a couple of years right after that.
So he stopped doing this stuff right around 69, which that's when we were born. And I feel like
we
were
Joe 90, the Secret Service, and UFO. And then he kind of had a break until he got work on Space 1999.
Yeah. I feel like I kind of want to find all that stuff and like consume it all.
Just go on an Gerry Anderson binge.
Well, I was just telling you by text, I'm going to totally get this season off Amazon, the entire thing. I bought the one episode, but then I'm like, well, this is pretty rad. I'm going to sit down with the kids and we're just going to sink ourselves into this weirdness.
Thunderbirds are go.
Because the attention to detail is really astounding. I don't think people realize the kind of work that takes. Like, that is a lot of stuff. And I love that there are shots in this thing where there's no way they're going to be able to properly show marionette hands gesticulating or manually moving things in the way they need to. So what they do instead, which I love, is they're just somebody's actual hands. Like when he had to grab onto the bar when he was underneath the plane.
Yeah.
And at first it didn't even occur to me. I'm like, oh yeah, that's, those are hands. That's a dude putting his hands in there. And it just, to me, that is fascinating. I love it. I could watch this all day. So I think I'm going to literally do that. I'm going to go get all this stuff. And there's probably some cool collection out there. I don't know, some Blu-ray, DVD, something.
Yeah, there was a DVD box set. Because the movie didn't come out in the 90s. It came out in 2004.
Right.
The live action movie. And around that time, that's when My Wacky Wobbler came out. Like, they started to come out with more merch around the original Thunderbirds as well, as part of like taking advantage of the movie. We ran Thunderbirds on Tech TV at that time.
Oh, interesting.
Because we knew the movie was coming in 2004. So I think maybe 2003 is when we started running Thunderbirds on Tech TV as a sort of not filler program, but you know, another thing in the schedule that was variety. Cause we were, Tech TV was trying to branch out, widen out the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So what they could afford to get the licensing for, that seemed to fit in the wider genre of tech, they would air. And Thunderbirds was well beloved by geeks, so that went in. Max Headroom was in. I can't remember if there was much else. They were later, after they became G4, got Star Trek and Lost and stuff like that too.
Right. There's a reference I found to, let's see if I can find this. Here it is. There was an early, let's see, in the early 80s, Anderson returned to puppetry for the science fiction series Terrahawks, which you mentioned. In the show, the characters were realized using long hand-controlled puppets, mostly controlled from beneath, using a system called Super Macromation, which was broadly...
Super Marionation had already been taken.
Yeah, it's already taken it, which is broadly similar to the technique developed by Jim Henson. So you know those shots of Jim Henson or any of those guys, like... what's his name doing Yoda underneath it's flooring, right? And they're right. Up like this. That would become the norm for like this sort of stuff. Strings and wires and stuff would go away, and nobody would do that anymore, which is a real bummer. And then you jump ahead to 2004, which is funny because that's when the live action movie comes out. That's also the year that Team America: World Police comes out.
Yeah. By the way, the Thunderbirds live action movie written by Jerry and Sylvia Anderson. By the way, we should be mentioning Sylvia. Sylvia was just as important to all of this as Jerry. Mm. And a little bit of controversy there because Jerry was married with kids when he met Sylvia on a production, on one of those earlier productions, and he left his wife and married Sylvia and had a kid with her and then stayed with her, I think, for the rest of his life. But yeah, she was one of the people who did some of the actual marionette work. And worked on that. She was originally Sylvia Tam or Tham. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Right. And they were a team forever. So don't minimize the contribution of Sylvia just because Jerry got the top credit because it was the 60s. But she co-wrote she got a writing credit on the Thunderbirds movie, which was directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah, that's a bad movie, by the way. Have you seen that movie? It's real bad.
Yeah. I say Jerry and Sylvia got writing credit. They didn't write the screenplay. That was written by William Osborne and Michael McCullers, so blame them.
Yeah.
I mean, you had
Bill Paxton.
Ben Kingsley. Bill Paxton. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you had a decent cast. It wasn't the problem. It was just this. They're missing the point. The point.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. Right? It's like, okay, well, it's a great story, Thunderbirds. Let's turn it into live action. I'm like, is it a great story or is it a great story because it's marionette? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, all right. So let's look at this first episode plot wise. There isn't much of one. The plot the plot goes like this. There's the head of the team, the rich guy. He's got a bunch of sons and he lives in a fancy place. And turns out he's also working on a secret international peacekeeping force and what do they call themselves? International
Rescue.
There you go. Where they come and
which
help
was
you.
Originally going to be the name of the series, and the planes would be called Rescues, and then they decided to call it Thunderbirds for some reason.
I think it's a more memorable name, isn't it? Because International Rescue.
It's more exciting.
Lame. But anyway, the whole plot goes like this. There's this brand new fancy international airplane that can do faster than the speed of sound. It's a supersonic plane. That's the state of the art. In fact, the seats in there, all these little puppet people are sitting in them, and it's more like a lounge. So even when they're buckled in for the takeoff and stuff, it's like this bar, right? Like, that's not normal plane seating at all. So the idea is this thing is going to make its first maiden voyage, and everything's going great, except this crazy guy has attached an atomic bomb somewhere in the engine undercarriage of this thing. So that's the main plot point that we're going to have to fight up against. Then the rest of the movie, or the rest of the show, I say movie, it feels like a movie. The rest of the show just
there's
is...
a story around that, too.
That's true. Well, you know, I want to hear that. But the way it works for the whole rest of the plot is them trying to disarm it, trying to land it safely. They keep sending different sons out to do different parts of the plan. And they eventually succeed... But it's a lot of trial and error. And I mean this when I say it. It's mostly like coordinates and directions.
Right, 2-2.
It's so weird. Like, it's
speed up a little. Okay, slow down.
It's not even really dialogue. Like, one of the things that the guy's main goal seems to be to get a camera inside of International Rescue's operations and in their plane.
Okay, yeah. No, let's talk about that.
All right,
let's
talk about him.
Right. International Rescue wants to remain secret. For reasons that they told them off camera. Which I guess in the Cold War era, you just sort of accepted more like, oh yeah, secrets, don't want the, you know, the Ruskies finding out or whatever. I don't know. It's all that high tech that brains delivers. But really, like,
oh yeah, so, brains. Forget about
and
him.
So the guy has a camera in his hat.
Yeah.
Like the hat camera is the I was expecting something a little more nefarious from the hood, I guess.
I did too. It's a great though, because it makes for this perfect moment, which would have taken advantage of what we knew about film at the time, which is if you expose it to light, you're done. So at the end, this helmet cam thing pops and the film just goes like a little spring out the front and his plans are foiled.
Which again, okay, we know we're not going to kill him because it's going to be a kid's show, but it's they run him off the road and they're like, okay, let's go home now. Like, what, you're not going to check and make sure that you know, what if his hat didn't pop open? You don't know. You didn't see.
Yeah. No, it's that stuff's weird. Like the actual acting and the kind of that stuff, VO and all that, not great. Like it's pretty bad. But there's some actually really cool sound design in the rest of it. I wore headphones for this viewing, and I was surprised. Like all the plane action sounded like big plane engines, and it's had, I wouldn't call it surround sound, but I felt like I was getting good stereophonic sort of effects of, I can tell there's a platform truck over here and the engine over here, and you know, like it. That stuff was weirdly impressive for a pilot in 1965. The visuals
are amazing. The landing sequence I was reading up on, he didn't have enough room to make a landing strip that he could shoot. So he just had to keep, you know, rolling, had a roll of what looked like the tarmac, what looked like the runway underneath, and he had to keep intercutting to make it look like they were going down the runway a long way, and it really worked. You couldn't tell that he didn't actually have a full-size runway model.
No, I totally bought that.
Yeah.
Also, I recommend a full-size runway model. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
now.
That stuff's great. All the action scenes landed on me like these guys knew what they're doing.
What I was about to say earlier, I don't think I completed the thought, was first half, you're just sort of watching how pretty it is and listening to the sound design and going like, yeah, this looks really cool. I guess it's enjoyable. But then when the action starts to happen, when they're landing the plane, you do find yourself like, oh my gosh, are they going to be able to do it? Even though you know they will, because it's a show, right?
Right. I'm not used to that. I'm used to being able to see this stuff coming a mile away, especially something like a marionette thing. Like, I'm not supposed to be in suspense here. This was a weird experience for me because I'm not supposed to feel that way about something like this. I had to question my own sanity for a minute because I think part of it is that
supposedly Gerry Anderson drew from his experience while stationed at RAF Manston in Kent from 1947 to 1949. And there was a mosquito fighter out of control that crashed to the ground, 20 fatalities. He saw a Spitfire with a damaged undercarriage make a successful emergency landing. There was also a mining disaster where a rescue organization came in, swooped in, and saved some miners. And all of those things combined to create this concept, and particularly this episode. So I feel like that when you have somebody's like, no, I was actually at an emergency air landing. This is how it happens. That makes it, that adds some intangibles that really make it work.
Yeah, it's interesting bit of personal touch it probably brought to the project. Check this out. Here's kind of what you expect from the dialogue.
Mr. Tracy, you are the finest man I have ever had the privilege to work for.
And you, Kirano, are the loyalist.
There you go. That's
well, and we heard the hood at the beginning of the show saying his misplaced loyalties. Yeah. It's a rare piece of consistency among the dialogue there.
Also, I like the 1960s era obsession with fake masks that would fool people into thinking you were somebody else. And they used that a couple of times. I think they kind of goofed up at one point, though. They had him in the car saying it was time for phase two. And he was alone, the bad guy. He had taken the face off previously and left it off.
Right.
But then he's in the car holding the face in his hand. And he's already wearing a different face.
I couldn't tell if it was the hood with hair on.
Yeah, I don't know what that was.
Or what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was weird. He didn't have the right eyebrows because the eyebrows are supposed to
be.
Now is he, okay, so here's where I don't know anything about the future of the series. Is he the bad guy like kind of throughout? Is he our Darth Vader or what? Do you know?
Yes, he returns another episode.
Okay, so he's
not the
gone.
Only bad guy.
All right, think. But he doesn't leave. He's not. This isn't the last of him. We see the Hood further down the line. Oh, I can't wait to watch the entire stupid.
Listen,
season.
Man, I know I've seen this episode before, but I realized when I was watching it that I saw it while working.
Yeah.
So I never really paid attention to an entire episode at once of Thunderbirds.
I have a memory.
As cool as it was.
I have a memory of watching Tech TV and seeing these. I have some recollection.
It would be at my
that.
Desk. I'd be working and they'd be on.
Yeah. I have some weird memory of like tuning in one cable day or on cable one day and going, oh, mm-hmm. the Thunderbirds, and then doing other things and not really paying attention. That is one thing I like about when we do these. We get a chance to like, I don't know, dive in when we would normally sort of just have this on and not pay attention, or we would dismiss it as this quaint old thing that doesn't deserve much attention or whatever. But and I know there are nerds out there who are really into this. Like,
oh, yeah.
They know things about his life that I will never know. They'll know things about how this stuff was produced, and they obsess about it, and that's awesome. I kind of understand finally why y'all feel the way you do, because it's really cool. Here's some additional dialogue. 13 seconds about the flight.
This is your flight. You're lucky it's the maiden flight of the new atomic-powered Fireflash.
Isn't that the new aircraft that flies 6 times the speed of sound?
That's right. But don't worry. It's perfectly safe.
Oh, that's ominous.
You know who that voice is?
No.
Sylvia Anderson.
Oh, that's very nice. Which one?
As Air Turanian flight attendant. Air Turanian. I don't think in this day and age we'd call an airline Terra anything.
No. That seemed a little.
It was supposed to be Terra, like Earth, but still.
Sure. I mean, the dialogue's cheesy and terrible, but I love it, so I'm not gonna have any complaints. Who plays? I lost my IMDb link. Who plays the super secret agent from Britain? What's her name again?
Oh, I think Sylvia Anderson also is the voice of her, Lady Penelope, as well.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Lady Penelope Creighton Ward. Yeah,
it's Sylvia Anderson great. As well. That's great. You and I are both fans of, you know, collaborating with our wives. It feels like in a modern era that she'd have gotten more credit.
Yeah, she was a co-creator. She should have been an executive producer. If it was today, she would have been.
Yeah. Now, do you think, or how do you feel about, so the new thing is mostly CGI, right? That's way cheaper to do that in 2018 than make a bunch of puppets and hand make a bunch of sets, obviously.
Sure.
There was a transition period, probably late 90s, maybe mid 90s, early aughts, where maybe that wasn't so true. Maybe you were, you know, it was about the same. It was kind of a wash which one would cost you more to do. Production-wise. But now we live in this time where it is vastly less expensive to render things on computers and get it done that way.
Mm-hmm.
Is it wrong for me to feel like something's lost because of that? I'm not trying to say I love where we're at and I love what we can do and what we're able to pull off, and it's amazing. It affects other areas that I enjoy, like video games and things. I just got done watching a whole lot of E3 stuff where I'm blown away by the technology involved. We're rendering things that we never used to be able to do, and they're nearly photorealistic. So I'm not really complaining. I wish there was more of this kind of care and this kind of stuff, whether it's from him or whether it's from Jim Henson or whatever. Do you feel like we're missing that now? It's just too easy to render it and not have to make it.
Okay. I have two thoughts on that. One is that I think we tend you're restating an argument that J.J. Abrams answered in The Force Awakens by saying we really went back to practical effects for a lot of things and only used CG where it was appropriate, because practical effects bring something that you just can't replicate with CG. I mean, this is an old argument, right? Mm. Once CG came along, people started using it, and then somebody said something's been lost. It doesn't look as cool. And we're finding the balance of when is a practical effect really better and when is CG good enough that you can't tell the difference and using it appropriately. So there's that side of it. And the other thing is, something like Super Marionation, certainly you I don't see you using it in the 60s because it's cheaper than animation. But it's another way of achieving something where you're like, hey, this is going to look better than animation because it's 3D. You know, it's got some depth to it that you'll never get in a cartoon. Even though we can now do depth with CG, I think there's an art there that Team America World Police showed is like, hey, it's still fun to do. So it's not lost because it's not like we had tons of Super Marionation films and then suddenly CG came along and killed the market for it. Right. It's a particular art form that I'd like to see more people try, but it is its own thing. It's not a replacement for something else.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. It's more of a, you know,
it's kind of why I'm sad that Thunderbirds Are Go,
right,
the 2015 series, just didn't go for Super Marionation again.
Sure, or something.
I think that would have been cooler, but the decision was, well, we'll do models. We'll take the stuff that looks good with practical and we'll use that. But the I've got strings and you can see me part, they're like, that doesn't work with a modern audience. Well, whether they're right or not, I don't know.
A good comparison would be stop motion, because there was a time where that got completely snuffed by other kinds of effects that you could do in film.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Especially CGI. And now that's made quite a comeback. There are entire films, thanks to Aardman and other great studios, that
people
are
rediscovering
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's great. And they're mixing it. You know, there's Kubo and the Two Strings is a great example of that.
Oh, yeah.
Seamlessly mixing CGI effects where appropriate, because that's the best for the scene, and then, you know, all this hand puppetry or hand animated puppetry is in there as well. So you end up with like this really great mix of the two. That's where I really like where we get. So
also it's practical done well,
right?
There are plenty of Super Marionation type things that have existed that just don't look good because they didn't put the work in it.
Right.
You know, Mettings and Company, that lounge where she's waiting to for the airplane, I'm like, that looks real.
Yeah.
That looks like Dean Martin's going to walk in with a whiskey, you know, here in a second. Like, you know, if there weren't a marionette sitting right in the center, I would not have been able to tell you that was a model.
Yeah, I get a lot of spared no expense vibe from it. Every scene didn't seem cheap. And I know that it seems retro, and that's impossible to avoid. I'm sure that those scenes of, like, that airport, the style of the 60s, the wooden paneling, the cheese ball carpet, the ugly furniture, all of that stuff, it was a thing of its time. But it was so meticulously replicated by hand, I just can't help but be in awe of that. You know, I wish I could create more stuff like that. My world is so digital that I feel like I missed out on a piece of it. And this just really brought it home, how cool that stuff is.
Well, yeah, because they're trying to show you the future, right?
Yeah.
That's what's so cute about it. There's a little bit of overlap with Lost in Space there. Like, oh, this is what they thought the future would be. They didn't realize that reel-to-reels wouldn't still be needed in the future. And on the other hand, they also didn't realize that, no, plane travel is going to get less comfortable in the future, not more comfortable in the future.
Yeah.
But there is that cool, like, oh, man, I kind of wish the future looked a little bit like the 60s thought it was, because it looks really good.
Yeah, and let's see, what did you say it was supposed to be set in the mid-2060s?
Yes. Alan Tracy was born in 2044, and he's 21 years old. So, yeah, 2065.
I love that. So they basically just bumped it 100 years is what they did, because they made this in, wait, would that be right? Yeah, they made it in 65. So they're saying it's 2065. So that's interesting. But yeah, like, I love that because there's so many like innovations that they try to show. Whether it's, you know, the plane itself or the fact that it has reverse thrusters or just, you know, how modern all this gets.
Like, I won't need a runway. I land vertically.
But then they're like, well, you still need to
kind of land vertically.
Sure. But they really missed the boat on how we'd communicate with each other and how cameras worked, for example. Like, you could have done so much better in 2065 than a
film camera in your hat. Yeah. or he gets it. Does he get a telegram? Is it a telegram? But he gets a paper message at one point.
Yeah. I think it was a telegram.
Yeah.
Which, again,
also, I didn't understand why the row of portraits of them in their uniforms had to change to portraits of them in regular clothes when someone, like, why didn't you just have them in regular clothes all the time?
Yeah, they don't have to switch it out. See, that's what I mean. They spared no expense. There's an excess here tell this tale of, like, not opulence, but we're the greatest force in the world, and it's all for good, and it's so good and so big that we even have double portraits depending on who's visiting the house so that we can swap them out. And also just the idea of having to have portraits, have one screen where they all can pop in when they need to, not a photo of everybody, lights blink, and then boom. It's
Each person's got their own dedicated portrait.
Right.
Yeah,
it's
that
so
they're going to talk on.
Such a weird idea. But I love it. I love it because they go all in. They don't just say, hey, wouldn't that be cool? They then go manifest it physically in a way that is so meticulous and so detailed. It's just mind-boggling to me.
Trapped in the Sky, interestingly, didn't get a national broadcast. It was broadcast on ATV Midlands in the UK at 7 p.m. September 30th, 1965. Then a two-part format debuted on October 20th for Granada Television's premiere.
Yep.
It actually didn't get a networked appearance in the UK until 1991 when BBC Two acquired the rights and started showing it. So, you know, well in its future, not at the beginning. It wasn't picked up nationally in the United States, which is one of the reasons that they didn't end up doing more than two seasons of it. They expected that they could get pickup in the United States. They had for Stingray. So it was only shown locally in markets here and there. It never got a national premiere. It was popular in other parts of the world, including Australia. And it eventually became massively worldwide popular. But one of the few television shows we've talked about in the old version of Autopilot or the new current geek version where it didn't really premiere for everybody, right? Even in one country.
Yeah. But also, keep in mind, we're talking 65. We're still in the middle of Beatlemania, right?
Yeah.
Like the British invasion proper, not just music, but in general, hadn't really happened yet, not in a big major way. So,
it was happening, right?
It was starting to happen.
When it's happening.
Yeah, it's starting to happen. So it seemed like maybe a good time for it. I'll bet you jump ahead 10 years. This is easily picked up over here.
Well, no, keep in mind, they picked the U.S. picked up Stingray. I think they also picked up either Supercar or Fireball XL5, maybe both. Mm. It may be that they were like, nah, we've tried that Gerry Anderson stuff. It just doesn't work that well.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, when I was younger, I don't know about you. I'm sure this is going to be true of you as well. But when you'd tune into PBS or wherever we could get it, and you'd see an episode of Monty Python, you just go, what in the crap is this? This is the greatest thing ever. And then you find out there's more British comedy and there's more British TV shows. And it felt like you'd tapped into a vein of, like, I don't know, it was like another planet.
Why are they hiding these?
Right.
because the Avengers, not the superhero Avengers, the crime-fighting British Avengers, John Steed and Emma Peel, that show was popular in the U.S. It was actually probably more popular in the U.S. than it was in the U.K., even though it was made in the U.K.
Yeah, and I like that. I like when that stuff ekes over here. I remember the first time I saw a Fawlty Towers episode and about lost my mind, and still maybe my favorite sitcom of all time. So I feel like we never get enough of this stuff. I didn't know Thunderbirds for the longest time was a British production. So watching this, I was extra careful to sort of listen to stuff. And the dialogue and the lines are coming from actors. Some are clearly American. Some are British guys trying to sound American.
I'm walking here.
And I love that. Like, don't do it any other way. Like, I want, like, the pilots in this thing.
Yeah.
That are in the ship.
I sure am an American pilot.
That's exactly it.
I'm kind of loud.
Yeah, look at that. This is an unsafe thing we're attempting.
I'm a little bit impolite sometimes because I'm American.
So having not seen any subsequent episodes in after this anyway, I've seen them in the past, but again, never really paid that much attention. Do things stay pretty consistent? Is this like a pilot in the sense that...
You keep asking me this as if I'm like the expert on the Thunderbirds,
well,
man.
I shouldn't ask you that because it puts you on the spot for a thing you
haven't
really
seen. I haven't seen any of them, Scott.
Right. I'm going to watch them for that reason, whether or not I
you
talk about
me.
The show.
Yeah.
I'll let you know. But the reason I ask is a lot of these pilots, and the way it used to be on Autopilot was, especially live action stuff, the pilot itself was so different from the rest of the series. Like Lost in Space, it was totally different.
Yeah, no. Okay, no, that's a good question because this pilot was originally 25 minutes long.
Yeah.
And when they showed it to Lou Grade, who was the finance guy at ATV, the distributor of the Thunderbirds, he loved it so much. He said, "You've got a movie here. Like, you need to expand this." So he gave them more budget and told them, make your episodes hour-long episodes. So they went in and they were actually shooting the later episode, like it's episode 6 or 7, Operation Crash Drive, which features the Fire Flash, mm-hmm. which is the big, you know, Concorde looking jet.
Right.
And so they used that to expand and shoot some new stuff. It's also one of the reasons that you get so many long shots. Like there's long shots of like the plane taking off. Like they had the room to breathe now because they had an hour. So they do a lot of that. But apparently among the newly added scenes after the pilot were the subplot concerning Mettings. Like that whole thing where he tries to get on board and remove the bomb himself and then falls out of the plane.
Yeah.
That was not in the pilot. The first rescue attempt involving the elevator cars where you had the gaff where the thing breaks, that was not in the pilot. They added that when they had more time and said, okay, yeah, we'll do what you want, Mettings. We'll add that in and make it a plot point. So the original pilot, I have not been able to find a copy of it. I found some people who sort of made their own best guess edits of like, this is what we think the 25-minute one would have looked like. I don't think they ever released that, though. So this pilot was made for air. Like, it was like, this is going up, and then we're just going to keep going. So yeah, I don't – of the other Thunderbirds episodes I've seen, they all seem to fit right into this particular –
Well, there were two feature-length sequels made. One was called Thunderbirds Argo and Thunderbirds 6. These were released in 1966 and 1968. I'd really like to get my hands on those if I can. But anyway, they had neither critical nor commercial success.
Yeah.
So they abandoned plans for any future stuff.
And it was a really popular series. It's still very popular, but people didn't go see it in the theaters, sadly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a hard sell, dude. It's like, want to see a bunch of puppets hanging on strings that you can see?
Well, but, I mean, that worked on television. I guess that was the thing. It's like, on my small screen at home, sure. On a big screen, I'm going to see the strings a lot more, I guess.
I wonder, yeah, because back then you're talking like crappy PAL, broadcasty, ugly-looking tubes in the UK that were probably still a lot of black and white tubes in 65. Like, I'm guessing it was just an easier thing to see or look at. You go to a movie with a 70-millimeter shot of a bunch of string puppets. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm completely whole clothing that because I don't know why people would avoid this stuff. I would have killed this. Well, I'm going to see him. I don't have to kill to see him. I can just get him.
Yeah, don't kill anyone.
No, we live in a time.
Or any animals.
We can get all this stuff now. For example, Thunderbirds digitally remastered 100% and first on DVD in 2000. I believe that's what the Amazon where I bought the episode. I believe that's what those are based on, that master. And then there's a Blu-ray edition that came out in 2008. I don't know if you can still buy that.
I'm sure you can find it used.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that this was only available for purchase on Amazon Prime Video. And I'm surprised for two reasons. Mm. One, I'm surprised it isn't Amazon streaming, and it's not streaming anywhere. There is no streaming. This is basically like you buy it or you don't watch it.
Right.
I also am surprised that it's only streaming on Amazon Prime Video. Mm-hmm. That you can't buy it on iTunes. You can't buy it on Fandango Now. You can't buy it on Vudu. Mm-hmm. You can't buy it on Google. That is unusual as well. There was one of those add-on streaming services for Prime Video that had it as part of its catalog. Mm. So I'm guessing that's why you can't find it streaming anywhere else, is that service has locked up the rights. Like, so you could, Scott, pay $2.99 to add on that service to Amazon Prime and watch all of them in a month for $2.99. You wouldn't have to buy every single one and own it.
That's true. Oh, breaking news. I don't know if this is still accurate, though. Let me just double check. Looks like as of today, well, I don't know if it's today. When did they put this up? It doesn't say. Looks like iTunes does now have series. Well, let's see. That's series
I looked yesterday, and I was not there.
I'm looking right here. It says $26.99 for the season, all standard def. Well, here, I'll put in the chat so people can look at it for themselves. But it's basically, looks like the, so I didn't realize.
No, I'm looking at justwatch.com and as of today, Apple has it.
Maybe they didn't have it
yesterday. Like, that's crazy.
That's really funny if they just put it up. Anyway, what was my point with that? My point is, yeah, this is all available, and I didn't know there was this many. 32 episodes, and they're all 49 to like an hour a piece. I'm so getting all this. I'm just going to do it. I mean, honestly. I mean, I may not get it digitally. I may look for Blu-ray or something, but I want to... I don't know why I want to see this so bad. Like, I feel like I missed something. I feel like I missed out on a thing where we have now reintroduced ourselves at this late age, and now I'm like, damn it. I missed a thing. This should have been a bigger part of my childhood or something.
I felt that way when it came to tech TV as well. Like, because there were so many people who knew it and were like, oh yeah, Thunderbirds. That's pretty cool. It's niche, you know, cult classic. And I'm like, how did I never come across this?
Yeah. They should stream this on Twitch or something like they did with, Power Rangers or whatever. It would be perfect.
Yeah.
So I'm going to play another clip. This is
Shout Factory TV. Is the streaming add-on for Amazon Prime Video, where if you just wanted to binge it all, you could pay $2.99 for a month, or even do a 7-day free trial of Shout Factory TV, and just watch it for free.
I've never even heard of Shout Factory.
Me either.
Yeah. All right, no wonder it's been locked away.
There's a bunch of those Prime Video add-on services that are like, I don't know where this came from, but all right.
Okay, I'll pay you $3 a month. Here's a conversation with the dad. This is all the sons. This will tell you just how big this family is. No girls, though, apparently. Just sons.
Okay, boys, that's the brief. It's our first assignment, so make it good. As you know, your uniforms are in your craft and must only be worn on call.
Right, Father.
Okay, Father.
Sure thing, Dad.
Yeah, Father.
Okay, Scott, away you go. And keep in touch.
Yes, sir.
So, do they all have their own ship? Did I get that right?
There's the one of them has the orbital one. Mm-hmm. One of them has the heavy rescue. One of them has Thunderbird one. And I think we have yet to meet the other ships in the full range.
Right.
I believe there are five.
Right.
Hence Thunderbird six, the movie showing
a sixth. The sixth one driven by the long lost brother Rico. I have no idea.
Yeah. You can buy Thunderbird six, the 1968 movie on Apple and Amazon. You cannot get Thunderbirds or Go except on DVD.
Oh, weird. I'll see
the 66 movie, not Thunderbirds or Go, the current.
Oh, series. Right. Well, you'd also think that Amazon would have the old stuff at the handy because this new thing that came out in 2015 is an Amazon original.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, it seems like it would benefit them to have all that old stuff. Now I'm super curious about that. Like, as much as I want to put my nose up and go, computers, what, this is lame, what happened to the marionettes, maybe that's good and I should give it a shot, but I'm gonna watch these first. I'm watching all 32 of these first, then I'll give you a shot, Amazon. I'm gonna pay $3 to Upshot or whoever you told me it was. What was it? Shout Factory. You know,
Shout Factory. You're gonna buy them and get Shout Factory?
I'm gonna get Shout Factory, watch them all.
Okay.
Because a streaming version is all I need. I don't care about anything else. So all right. I'll do that. Watch it all. We'll see what else Shout Factory has, if it's interesting. $3 a month is cheap. And then I'll roll into the Amazon thing, and maybe we'll do a comparison at some point.
By the way, you can get Thunderbirds Are Go, the 66 movie, and Thunderbird 6 on one DVD.
Really?
One Blu-ray, as a matter of fact.
Available now? Like I could buy
available that? For... $55 or $23.
Wow.
I don't know what the difference between those two prices is because it's on the same listing.
Yeah, I'm looking. It's so hard to.
Oh, it's a used price, I think.
Oh.
So you can buy it new for $55 or there's a used version for $23.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Yeah, I found the complete series came out in 2015, DVD 31. Multi-format 40. What does that mean? Multi-format. I don't know what that means. All right. Well, we'll see. Oh, there's a whole other set. DVDs, set one. That's the first season. $2.03. That's used. All right. There's obviously options. I'm going to look into it because I want to know more. I got some other clips here. This is the, what's this? This is the dad talking again, I think.
What are we going to do? I don't know. We can't reach the bomb. We can't land. And if we stay up here, we get radiation exposure. Whichever way you look at it, we don't stand a chance.
They haven't got a chance.
They hadn't got a chance.
They barely have the accent.
We might as well just give up. I love the conceit of it's you know, everything was atomic in the 60s, right? Yeah. I love the conceit that this atomic airplane can only go 2.5 hours before the shielding breaks down. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that's a pretty crappy shielding. Like, you can't fly very far. I mean, I know this thing goes fast because it goes 250,000 feet in the air. Like, right. It's crazy. Suborbital. It's like the Virgin Galactic or something. But also, Kirino is like a major plot point. He's been a controlled at a distance by the hood. And then they just sort of like Doc sees him like, doesn't seem like anything's wrong. He's like, I feel fine with my ambiguous ethnic accent.
Yeah, he didn't. I thought he would play a bigger role.
So I guess they're going to let that, you know, drift out into future episodes. But then they make a big deal about his daughter coming, and his daughter's on the plane. They never focus on her after they announce that the plane is in peril.
Yep.
They never show her freaking out or, you know, worried. And then when the plane finally lands, nobody acknowledges that she's safe. They don't even mention her for the rest of the episode.
It's like they got too wound up in the rescue part, like the because that was intense and long and lots of instructions, and then a failed attempt, and then a reattempt, and then a failed attempt. Like, I think they just got so wound up in that, and I'm not sure I'm complaining. I kind of thought that worked really well. It was effective for a thing this old. Caught me off guard. Here's a bit of the Meddings conversation, because his idea, why it's going to work, damn it.
Well, Meddings, you understand the risks involved?
Perfectly, sir.
All right. Get into your flying gear. The harness should have been adapted by now. Then get a truck to run you out to the end of 2-9.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Meddings.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, I love a good trope about a guy who's going to sacrifice it all to...
Also, what harness? Like, I know what they mean later when we see the thing, but that was the first mention of the harness because they didn't even let us hear the plan. They're like, now run it to me again, and this time slowly. And then we cut away.
I know. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
I feel like some of that stuff got moved. Here's a scene about slender chances.
Fireflash, this is London Tower. We are going to attempt to put a man into the wing of your aircraft in order to remove the bomb.
But that's suicide. He wouldn't stand a chance.
There is a chance, Fireflash. A very slender one, but one we must take.
All right.
Nobody has any confidence in this show. And there's no chance. We don't have any options. I guess we'll just have to watch everybody die.
Yeah. It's a little weird to see. So all the Americans seem to, except for Thunderbird Central, they all seem to be assigned kind of the negative roles, like the roles of kind of grumpy, grouchy, how's this going to work? We're all going to die kind of roles.
Well, and the flight control guy, the British flight control guy, is the same way. Like, they don't stand a chance. Yeah. I guess we'll just have to let them crash. Get everybody out of there. So when they all crash and die, they don't take anyone else with them. Let's plan on that.
It's a little bit of a dark future for them. How about this here about, let's see. Oh, I just like this line.
7,500 miles per hour.
7,500 miles an hour. Have you gone crazy?
Are you going crazy?
That's not a number. It's 7,500.
No, it is not a number. And a final clip about rescue.
International rescue? What is this?
That must be the aircraft I just picked up.
This I must see.
I want like a spinoff series of just those two guys, those chuckleheads in the tower.
So, also, don't get me wrong with these criticisms. I love Thunderbirds. Yeah. I love this episode. It was really fun to watch. But it is also fun because of these inconsistencies. Oh, we're like, so really, London Airport just is like, we don't know who you are, but sure, you can land. That's fine.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I like a good cheese ball romp and things. I like dumb stuff. This show brings you plenty of dumb stuff. I'm ready for more of it. Bring on the dumb stuff, I guess is what I'm saying.
Because there's good stuff in it too.
There's plenty of good stuff, sure. Yeah. Like, and I'm sure it even gets better as I go. If they felt like they were doing well from the get-go, that means other episodes are going to be even more interesting. I'll let everybody know what I think after I download the entire, or I guess stream the whole thing from moviebucket.com or whoever it was you said. The name
Shout Factory.com.
Or no, just Shout Factory.
They have a branding issue if you thought it was Movie Bucket.
I think a lot of things are things that they're not. So that's on me. Anyway, that's going to do it for the show. Thank you all for listening. Our next Autopilot, which is in three weeks. It's a month. Whatever it is. How long is it? It's two more episodes.
It'll be next month. Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be in July. Our July episode for Autopilot will be, and you guessed it, a very controversial topic here, and also dealing with characters that aren't real. The Animaniacs. It's about to make a big return, and a lot of people love that show, and I hated it. So we're going to find out if I still hate it, first of all, and second of all, if I do, I will explain my side of this, and we can have a good old-fashioned debate. And I would like it if listeners would pipe up and tell me why I'm wrong ahead of time. All right, so you got a bunch of time. Next week's a normal Current Geek. We just have the normal news kind of setup thing. We do all that. That's great. Then we do our movie thing, and then we get back to a normal one, and then we do this again. By then, that should be enough time for you to send emails saying why I'm wrong, because I'm happy to hear your arguments, and I'm happy to fight it out with you, but I am not a fan, and I have lots of really specific reasons why I'm not.
By the way, Shout Factory helps produce Mystery Science Theater 3000 The Return for Netflix.
Oh, that's cool.
And they, in addition to having their own TV streaming stuff, they're the MST3K producers.
See, they're busy bees down there. Yeah. Down there to the Shout Factory. Listen, if
you're producing shouts all day long.
Someone's got to make those shouts. They're not going to make themselves. Anyway, excuse me, that's going to do it for the show. Thank you all for being here. Don't forget, you can support the show at patreon.com/currentgeek. And of course, as always, you can go to currentgeek.com for all other details. By the way, Tom, congratulations. Your book funded. Well done.
Thank you. Yes, absolutely. Thanks to everybody who pre-ordered Trigger. I can't wait to get it rolling to you. I know it's going to take a while, but your faith will be rewarded.
Yeah, I can't wait to read my copy. It's super exciting that it happened. Thank you all for doing that. A big part to the audience of this show who listened to us and took our recommendation and did it. Again, that's currentgeek.com for all the details you may need. I just did a ton of E3 content. You can find that at frogpants.com. So go check that out. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we covered the landmark election law decision from the Supreme Court this week on the practice of purging inactive voters from the voter rolls and registries. The Supreme Court decided Husted v. A. Philip Randolph Institute this week, which was a case regarding a massive purge of Ohio voters from that state's voter registry. The purge was enacted a few years ago in Ohio by using a voter's failure to vote in elections as evidence that the voter has moved and therefore should not be on the rolls anymore. Of course, if the voter then returns to try and vote without having re-registered to do so, which needs to happen 30 days in advance of the election, they cannot vote, or their vote is made on a provisional ballot, which undergoes heavier scrutiny before being included in the counts. The law on point from the challengers of this practice is the National Voter Registration Act of 1993, commonly called the Motor Voter Act. This law requires states to provide a number of different types of voter registration, including whenever a driver's license is renewed or obtained, and it also requires states to maintain voter registration lists that are accurate and current. The goal is to make it easier and more understandable for people to get to the polls and vote. In the latter requirement, about keeping registration lists current, voters being removed for moving away or for non-voting can only be done so after meeting certain other requirements, aka there are safeguards against improper removal of voters. So you may ask, what safeguards did Ohio use to avoid removing voters improperly? Here's how the purge works. Ohio sends notices to registrants who have not engaged in any voting activity for a period of 2 consecutive years. These voters are removed from the rolls if they do not respond to these notices, and then continue to be inactive for another 4 years. Thus, it takes 6 years to remove a voter from the registration lists, and Justice Alito, writing for the court's majority this week, found this to be acceptable as a purge mechanism consistent with the law. In short, Alito argues that it is not the lack of voting that causes the purge, But instead, this is just a piece of evidence indicating someone has moved, which then eventually can lead to a purge. Justice Breyer writes a dissent that argues that a system which assumes you have moved, based on a lack of voting, that does not kick into action otherwise, puts the impetus on the non-voting, which by itself cannot be a factor used to remove voters from the rolls under the law. Both sides make what I consider to be plausible interpretations of the law to reach their respective conclusions, although both interpretations are very complicated and above the depth of our normal coverage here. The law is ambiguous enough to allow for this, and so we end up with a 5-4 split decision at the highest court accordingly. The Ohio practice is therefore deemed legal for purging voters from the registration rolls, and the practice can continue there, as well as perhaps be more widely adopted in other states. That's what happened following up on the Supreme Court's similar decision in a 2008 case called Crawford, in which an Indiana voter ID requirement law was upheld as constitutional, leading to voter ID laws in a majority of states over the past decade. These safeguards and measures are made in the name of preventing voter fraud, but studies have shown that voter ID laws, and even this Ohio purging the rolls practice, ends up suppressing the votes of legitimate voters who want to participate. Indeed, these studies show a disproportionate effect of many of these measures on the impoverished and minorities. That begs the question of whether these practices are enacted to serve those who don't want such types of people to vote, or if they really are for the prevention of fraud. This debate is a core background to these election law cases. The bottom line is, the openness of the polls in Ohio to all potential voters arguably closed a bit this week, thanks to this voter purge practice being upheld. But it will be a few years before we see if this has the same impact as voter ID laws have had nationwide. One can hope that we stop politicizing ballot access, because we as citizens should all have a fair voice in this thing we call government, for better or for worse. If you will be coming to Origins Game Fair in Columbus, please check out my seminar on game design and IP law, which will be held on Friday and Saturday. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.